Succession number 9364, Reel 2.
Mr. Bethel, Reel 2.
You want to know what happened in the mornings? Well, this coffee used to permeate over the whole of the barracks. You could smell it. And breakfast was meagre. It wasn't anything particular. We, as drummers, used to stand on the landing, beating our knobs and forks, waiting to charge Dan. And a raucous voice would shout out, "Come on down!" And then there'd be a scurry down in this dining hall, such as it was. And you'd got what meagre food there was, which wasn't sumptuous. It wasn't anything like today. But it was there. You got food. Latterly, of course, on the Amethyst, when I joined the ship, I used to live on a biscuit with a torso on all day. That was my ration.
What sort
no
of
bread, no bakery, old-fashioned ship.
What sort of food did you get whilst you were training here?
Well, it was edible. You could say, well, it wasn't fine. It was just enough. That was all.
What would you have for breakfast?
Well, I wouldn't know. Maybe a piece of bacon and a slice of bread, or two slices. You could have as much bread as you like. We used to give it away outside the barracks to the poor people who would come and get loaves of bread for nothing. Because with this Waterloo Station effort, with everybody coming in and going out, and this constant flow, imagine, we lost three cruisers in as many seconds, almost. Abuka, Hogue, Cressy, all went, all full of pensioners, and they all were torpedoed and gone. And then you get the effects of all the wailing ladies who had lost their husbands and their dads and brothers and sisters. Oh, God, it was one great Waterloo Station, sad one, very often.
What would you do after breakfast?
After breakfast, right. You go down learn to play the bugle and the fife and the drum. And this we used to go down outside the barracks for, because we were a darn nuisance, I suppose, inside. You had to learn the fife in those days. They don't learn it today. They don't play the fife, the flute. Dad could play the flute quite well. He was ex-drummer of many, many years before, imagine about 30 years before, 40 years before me. He died at 105, as you know. You've got the tape on him. Nearly 105. Very, very much in love with music.
Had you learnt to play anything before you joined the Marines?
No. No, I learnt the fife after I joined. I was trying to learn the piano, which I loved, which I would have done. But they whipped me away because, I was a boy. They didn't think boys needed music. I'm afraid my mother, as sweet as she was anti-boy. You know, the girls came first. And Doris was so brilliant. How difficult to follow somebody top of the school. Honours with every exam she took in music, as was Stella, was brilliant. And here I was, lumbering along trying to play a kettle drum, which was no or percussion in no sense.
What was the instruction like in the Marines?
Oh, I'll never forget it. We had a corporal who used to teach us, Bill Annam. And Bill used to say, "See that hole there? That's the embouchure. And you blow through the embouchure." The only big word old Bill ever knew, I think, the embouchure. And the drums, you know, you had to do this to strengthen your wrist and all that jazz. You had to have various beats, two-stroke, the regimental march. You get that. You learned the rhythm to that, the beat to that, part of the training, you know, exactly where every beat flowed, and it was a 6-8 time, so you get this jumpy childlike da-dum-pa-dum-pa-dum-pa-dum-pa-dum-pa-dum-pa-dum-pa. That was a part of the march, the military march, the Royal Marines march. The flute, well, the fife they didn't worry too much about. You had to play it a bit. But to teach anybody to be a real master of the flute inside of 6 months is going some, especially bugle and drummers, and PT and goodness knows what. But anyway, then we had this training at the back of the barracks where you blew yourself flat with this bugle. You learned certain bugle marches so that you could play with the band and with the bugles alone, which we did quite well. One time in that parade down there, we had, just after the war, with this terrific glut of drummers, we had 100 buglers in the band, and 100, drummers and buglers, you know. Imagine it, an enormous band. As I say, I don't know, I'm not sure of this, but nearly sure, at one time the Marines reached about 250,000. Terrific, isn't it? Where they just wanted you, bodies, lots of bodies.
How many were learning to play the drums with you?
I would think 40 of us, 30 to 40.
And were you all youngsters?
Oh yes, mainly. There were one or two old soldiers, they'd be 4 or 5 years service maybe, or maybe corporals, and the drum major and the bugle major, who was a little squirt with a wax moustache. He used to umpire, referee football matches and that. He was quite cocky, which was probably a good thing, because he had to domineer this refereeing and that, which he did quite well. Drum major was a great guy, Holton his name, when I first joined. And he was a great big chap for those days. It wouldn't have been big these days. About 6 foot, which were quite big. It's so difficult to appreciate the size of people today with yesterday and the day before. I wonder how big they were in, and how good military forces the Romans were. I reckon they were only fleas by comparison of today's people. You're quite tall.
What did you do after your musical instruction?
Oh yes, then you had that, and you went down the swimming bath. No, gyms. No, swimming bars first, that was it. Which was, swimming bars was in the open. And winter, it didn't matter. They chased you in with a stick if it was cold. You had to be tough. And of course, I was dead scared of this blooming swimming bar to look at it and think, oh my God, I've got to go in there a minute. And there was no doubt I was going in at the end of a boot. And you went in anyway. And some of them could swim quite well. They came from Greenwich, where they'd been coached sensibly. And I think I always did afterwards, when my two girls came along, I just made sure they weren't scared. They got on my back and I swam with them until they were confident.
What was the method of instruction in the Marines then?
Kick you in with a boot. Well, get you on the end of the diving board, give you a good push. Very scientific. You can imagine. I used to lay on this palliasse and think to myself, oh my God, swimming tomorrow. Hope it rains. Of course, it didn't always rain. Of course, afterwards, I became quite a strong swimmer. I mean, nothing of 5 mile. But the method was barbaric. If you didn't die, why not? You know, got to be a brave Marine, go and die. It's all right. Anyway, of course, in view of what was to come, it was essential. Captain Coo was the adjutant, and he was a nice enough bloke. I remember playing cricket and him telling me to pitch the ball in the middle of the pitch or he would take me off the bowling. And I was pig-headed and didn't do as I was told. And years afterwards, I saw the wisdom of what he was talking about. You had to get people out. You had to put the ball like they've just done with Gatting out in the West Indies. Aim at his head. same as him going in off the deep end. You know, you couldn't teach you. All you want to do is get a rough sea and kick in. And if you don't swim well, you'll be a failure.
How long did it take you to learn to swim?
Oh, about a month, I suppose. I was swimming the length. You had to swim in a duck suit, which cuts you, you know, and it was tough. And the blooming duck was...
What's
just,
a duck suit?
Well, stiff as a board. Absolutely stiff as a board. When it fitted on your trousers, it didn't touch your legs. They hang on your legs like a couple of drain pipes, you know, where they were so stiff.
Could you describe it?
Big one?
Could you describe it?
What, the duck suit? Yeah, it was duck. White duck. Hard as buckram. And... they just hung on you. They were like it was made of an awning material. Thick and coarse. And of course, I was just the odd man out here, because instead of, which would have been far more merciful if I'd have gone to Greenwich, at the hell out of it and tell my mum and somebody, you sing your sacred song while I learn to swim. Imagine, God willed it so. Next door, Doris, my dear sister, she's dead now, died of cancer. Brilliant pianist. Doris and Sully used to play Grieg's piano concerto on two pianos. You can imagine there, you're talking about something extraordinary, class. And Doris, top of the school in Perth. In Scotland.
Did you have a swimming lesson every morning?
Oh yeah, if it rained, I was lucky, I used to get away with it, see. And I used to think, oh, thank God for that. But it should never have happened, this is a vital point. I mean, my Hazel had the silver life-saving medal when she was 12. I don't think she was allowed it, but she had qualified for it.
What would you do after swimming?
Oh, PT, jumping box horses. I remember once down there boxing, and because I wasn't aggressive enough, the bloke come along, gave me a damn good push from the back, which caused me to get a thump on top of the nose, which made my nose bleed. So they said, oh, that's fair enough. Get him, dip his head in a fire bucket and be all right. And all the exercises were lunging, mad. I didn't have a son, and I ran a football team here for 10 years. And of course I won everything. I won the blue ribbon for Hampshire, junior football, of course. They were 17, all these kids were. They can't do
what else did they teach you in your PT lesson then?
Jumping box horses and lunging. You see, modern sense says the muscles have got to be soft. The blood has got to flow quickly round in order to... I did a course of physiotherapy at Fratton Park with this team, when I had this team, and, to study what I could add to help them. Do you know what the cause of cramp is? Lack of salt. Do you know how to get rid of it? Turn your toe up. If you get it in the back muscles, which generally you do, catch hold of somebody's toe, pull the leg out straight, and tip it back hard. That causes the tendons to stretch. But
what did they teach you when you were in the Marines?
Well, lunging exercise. Right foot, forward, lunge. And you'd lunge it out, stiff as a buckram, and all stiff exercises. That's why I would never go in for tug of war, because our tug of war teams were second to none. They were brilliant, and their execution was really fine. They could change lock to a lock position on the rope so quickly and so adeptly, you know, and all synchronized. And of course, They used to walk with a limp, where the muscles that side of the body, where you're on the rope on that side, had become contracted, and you were turning yourself into a steel bar.
Did you have to do tug of war?
No, I didn't have to do it, but I used to avoid it because I realised it was silly. At Deal, for instance, many years afterwards, the Swedes came over and gave us demonstrations, and our chaps would say, "Well, you see that grand piano? Well, I can shift that, I can lift that." And the Swede would say, "Yes, so can I. But I should lift it with rhythm and poetry, and you will lift it like a blooming lump of steel."
What did you do after PT in the mornings?
After PT, lunch.
What
dinner,
sort of lunch would you have?
Well, you more or less fought for it. You went down and said, "Line up here, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, you were the next," and so on. But it wasn't. The corporals, of course, the corporals and the old soldiers, the chap who'd done it in for about 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, they had a dinner table of their own. Theirs was special. Yours was thrown at you, if you know, it wasn't thrown at you, but it wasn't anything but delicate.
What food did you get?
Well, ordinary meal, it wasn't too bad. I mean, you could say, after 6 months afterwards, when I had me blooming biscuit with lumbered Tora suet on all day, I knew it was different.
How adequate did you think it was at the time?
By today's standards, not very adequate, dear. They don't know they're alive today, by comparison. I mean, I don't know. When you think of the butcher shops, when you could buy a joint for 2 and 6, a lump of beef costing 2 and 6 then would cost £5 today.
Did you get meat for your lunch?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we had a kind of meat, but it wasn't very artistic, it was slapped up. And if you were unlucky, you didn't get a very good meal.
And what were your duties after your meal?
Beg your pardon?
What were your duties after your meal?
You learned to play the fife in the afternoon. You played the whistle pipe. You could hear us squeaking all over the place. And Bill Annan, when he's in Bolcher, this is the in Bolcher, that's about the top thing old Bill knew, I think. He didn't know anything much about music. I would learn far much more at home to Doris. Doris used to say, I used to come home and she'd be playing some classic, and I'd beat on the table with making a living noise with a knife and fork or something, and she'd say, "Shut up."
Did your fife lesson last all afternoon?
Most of the afternoon. And then, of course, you had the various calls to make. Officers dressed for dinner, guard duties sometimes, on guard. You could be on guard. I remember once going on the officer's mess and playing defaulters for the officers dressed for dinner, but they didn't notice any difference. I came away and said, I've made a mistake. Nobody noticed it. They all thought that.
What was the officer's dress for dinner? What duty was that?
Well, the officer's dress for dinner, they used to play outside the barracks. I can't remember myself now. However, we used to play it, and the officers had to get ready to go down to lunch at a certain time. I was generally about 7, half past 7. And I played defaulters. You can be defaulter as long as you like, as long as you answer your name. I played it. It was very similar.
Was this on the bugle?
Yeah. And
what was guard duty? Where did you have to do that?
We were on the gate. They said that the first Marine, the last Marine to leave the barracks would have the clock. But of course the clock's still there. They all think that's a load of junk, don't you? Yeah, had to go around playing, saying off defaulters they had to attend to make sure they were in barracks, that kind of thing. Fire call and that was if it was necessary, but there was never necessary, but we were there. Huge steel shed, you know, they had there. Used to have boxing matches in that. We had one drummer, a Plymouth drummer, won the champion of Europe, champion boxing match of Europe, and went away from the Albert Hall on a bike. Imagine. Fought 20 rounds, a chap named McCorgy, and went away on his bike.
After you'd played the bugle on duty, were you free for the evening?
Yes, more or less. Most of the evening was spent. A drum, the old-fashioned drum, of course it's a new drum now, they keep on boasting about it, and the skin of a drum has got to be wet so that you can tighten up the drum sides of it. You know, you by pushing down these pads, you contract the rope that holds the drum together, and it gives you a nice sharp tone. If a drum is slack, it's more bass-like in its noise. And that's the kind of thing you'd be up to. Or maybe something on, such as the Corps Boxing Championships. All that kind of thing would be taking place in the drill shed, which were quite something. At one occasion, I remember in 1916, just before I left to go to the Amethyst, they had a concert party, and they were quite reasonable, and they were, I know, the bloke sung When the Angelus is Ringing and all this kind of thing, and the bells are ringing for me and my gal, and all that. I remember that, and that would have been in the gymnasium where they held this, had a stage and all this kind of thing, you know, it was all very patriotic. And
what other entertainments would you have?
One of the great delights, if you had threepence, our pay was 8 and a penny a week. If you had threepence, you could go down to Dave Ganny, who was a sergeant of the Corner Naffy, as it was in those days. And on the top of a woodbine box that they got the woodbines in, tuppenny packets of woodbines, you could get a bit of mashed potato and one sausage. That was great luxury. My father was, at that period, was drawing something like £8 a week, which is enormous money. I was very glad of threepence to buy a bit of mash and one sausage with, if you had this threepence, which of course, very rare I had threepence.
Did you receive any pay?
8 and a penny a week. Without that, you had to buy your bluebell to clean your bugle with, and woe betide you if it wasn't clean, and your drum, which also needed bluebell, and I suppose a tin of bluebell would cost about tuppence halfpenny. Big tin, sixpence.
What else did you spend your pay on?
You didn't have much pay to spend, did you? 8 shillings. I mean, you had to buy your cleaning material, maybe needles, cotton, things, little things like that, but eight and a penny didn't go very far. It was an existence in that way, in that sense, you know. And they're all brave as lions when I think back.
What time did your day end?
Well, like I say, it would have been 10 o'clock. There was, as I told you about, Major Coode, or Captain Coode, he was the adjutant down there for a period when I was a drummer. He was quite intelligent. I mean, here he's telling me to bowl bumpers. I'd never heard of a bumper. And he realised that if you made a bloke play a tennis racket shot with a cricket bat, he was going to either get out or get hit in the head, get out your way, in other words. But I didn't have the savvy to listen to me to what he was trying to tell me. He was too intelligent.
Did you have any training other than your musical instruction? And your PT?
Oh, yeah, PT. Lots of PT. Bit of boxing. But all these lunging exercises, everything's stiff and rigid.
What about the use of weapons?
No. No rifle use, no. Only what Dad had taught me. And when I first started to shoot, I remember trying to shoot with my left eye. Everybody got a master eye. Did you know you've got a master eye?
No.
You have. When you look, you don't look with two eyes, you look with one eye. Do you know that? Do you know how to prove it? Point your finger at something. I'll tell you this.
What about drill?
Yeah, drill. This is amazing. Which they don't do these days, which is interesting. They used to salute left, salute right. Now they only salute with the right hand. And so you had up, two, three, up, down. You count one, two, three, down. You have to do it ever so smart. If you weren't, you were in trouble. Of course, in being young, you're roguish. But you had to salute both hands. They don't today. They only salute with the right. We didn't know bayonet training and like that. Only this ordinary squad drill, as you would call it. The squad drill is said to promote discipline, that you gradually impel it into the chap, where it is that when you shout, he moves, and this kind of thing. It happens all over the place. Close order drill, they call it. Close order drill if you get bad discipline. We used to say on Easterly Parade, cough. And you want a man to stand to attention. That kind of thing. Well, you get that. And so we used to get a basin full of that. We were quite smart, I suppose, really. Smart as anybody else. We tried harder, being young. And
could you tell me about discipline and punishments?
Quite honestly, in the Corps, as there was very little punishment. You know, you would get thumped on top of the nose if you didn't watch it, which was common amongst the drummers. They all had their particular lean toward discipline.